Don't hold back. Don't think that you have to get it all right. Give it a go. Treat it as a simulation. You know, we can all learn things at the same time, as long as it's grounded in a safe approach, as long as there's that pedagogical understanding, you understand those learning outcomes. You don't need to be a simulation expert. You can do something and build on it.
That was Adam Leyland talking about how to use simulation in healthcare education. You're listening to Casting the Network with David Smith and Hitam Mitha. Each episode, we'll be talking to a guest to bring you stories, knowledge, skills, and research that center around healthcare education. Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy it. Casting the Network is powered by Lecturio, a global leader in digital medical education. Lecturio believes it's time to teach evidence-based medicine in an evidence-based manner. It provides the content and digital platform to enable learning, science-based medical education delivery. Lecturio works with any curriculum or mix of learning formats. To find out more, visit lecturio.com. Hello and welcome to another episode of Casting the Network with me, David Smith, and again with my co-host, Hitam Mitha.
Hi everyone, really excited about this episode, episode number 5 now. So we're really getting into these podcasts and hopefully everybody's enjoying them so far as well.
Yep. And today we are talking with Adam Leyland. Adam is a paramedic by background who has moved from practice to education and now into policy as head of commissioning at Health Education England. Adam, a very warm welcome to you.
Thank you very much. Very excited as well as Hitam is for this.
Great. And today we're going to be talking about simulation in healthcare and particularly in healthcare education and the many uses and guises that simulation comes under. Adam, can you take us back to 2018 when you ran a cross-faculty simulation that included multiple healthcare professionals? Where did this idea come from and what did you do?
No, of course, David. And thank you again for inviting me along to speak on this podcast today. Back in 2018, as all good ideas start, I was having a pint with a colleague of mine whilst I worked at Coventry University, and we were discussing different options that we had to share interprofessional learning and share different ways that different people could come together to undertake an assessment and a simulation to really gather a solid outcome for their interprofessional learning and for their future readiness in the world of work as such. And my colleague was a emergency planner, and me having that kind of background from the ambulance service and as a paramedic, I was instantly bought into the idea of hosting like a major incident simulation. And then with many colleagues across the university and different faculties, we pulled together what we ended up calling COVSIM. As you said, David, it's a multi-faculty approach to simulation. And within that, we ran 6 scenarios, 6 stations as part of a day's work simulated activity, utilizing the different range of equipment and experience and facilities that the university had, which is still absolutely one of the best in the world overall. And the simulation faculty a runner-up award internationally for all of the simulation activity that they were doing. So the scenario was based around a major incident at a festival, a music festival. And of those scenarios, the first one was about emergency planning. So what would we do? We've got this music festival coming up. What are the plans we need to put in place? What are all these things we need to consider to make this festival smooth? That was the first scenario. The second scenario was actually in the festival. So we had a simulation center with a huge wall, which goes to your peripheral vision, which we simulate and display the music festival. So you can wander around as if you're at Glastonbury or different music festivals, see the stage and the lights flashing. We've got music blaring in the room as well. So you are fully immersed in that experience. And unfortunately, that's when the major incident starts. People start collapsing. There's a fire on the stage and you have to see that situation and start to think how you're going to enact those emergency plans that were prepared in the first scenario. That one then shuts down and we move into the world of social media and have a scenario on dealing with social media in the aftermath of such an event. So what are those tweets looking like? How are you getting public information out to everybody that's at this festival, telling them what to do and how to prepare and look out for things and also do a press release? It's really important that the social media, the press release and the emergency plans are saved, and you'll understand why when I come to the final scenario. After this scenario, we moved into our, at the time, brand new Alison Jungel building, which had a full patient simulation hospital with theatres, emergency departments, wards, ambulances, etc. Everything that you would expect to find at a hospital, obviously in a smaller scale. And here we simulated the arrival at an emergency department. We had a number of actors. We had a high and low fidelity simulation equipment in beds, a lot of background noise playing, and many different participants which can simulate an emergency department. So for anybody who's unfortunately had to go to an emergency department, you can imagine this scenario, the noise, the hecticness going on, and even more so following a major incident. And the students collectively had to plan and react to what was going on in that scenario and come up with what they wanted to do to make it safe and efficient for everybody that was going to be arriving. After that scenario, the fifth scenario was to a more macro level management situation. So everyone very quickly became promoted to executives of that hospital. And they had to work together with the healthcare community, the local authority, to plan their line of attack. So we came up with a range of different actions that needed to be taken, and they had to prioritize those actions overall. And a bit naughtily, we added in somebody from the government that kept entering the room asking for an immediate update for the Prime Minister. So we added another level of simulation in to really test their ability and to throw a no, you can't do that now. The Prime Minister needs to know this now. It's going to the Cobra Committee. That was kind of the day. What we then did for the final scenario is jump forward 6 months to what would happen in these situations where you would have a public inquiry. And we moved across to our law faculty into our courtroom, which is a fully functioning courtroom, as you would see. It's been used on television in the past as well. And we cross-examined the participants in the dock with a judge in the seat, fully robed up, so proper simulated courtroom environment, with a very harsh legal cross-examining barrister played by myself. I enjoyed being in the wig and the gown. And we really took the examples from being an emergency plan from scenario one. Scenario three, social media and press publicity, that the outputs from that. We took their planning actions from the executive team, and I challenged them on all of the decisions that they made. And that was testing their ability to remember what they did and justify their decisions overall. And we wrapped that up, giving them some tips and techniques for when they are in that situation ever in the future. And I hope that they never are. Of course, finishing the day and the scenario was about health and well-being and debriefing. So important that we followed our pedagogical approach, not only about learning outcomes, but about the safety and support that we could give to all of the participants. It was a highly traumatic, highly exaggerated example of what could happen, purposefully to prepare people so when they are in that situation, they've done it once, they've got those kind of scars, they know what's coming, and they can be better able to fulfill their jobs when they're in those roles. So it was a great day overall. It was really brilliant. And there's a video, I don't know if we could put a link in with the podcast, there's a video which kind of shows you all of these different scenarios as well, so you can actually see it rather than me just explain it. But a fantastic day and great outcomes for students.
I think that's amazing. I can't believe that you managed to fit all of that into a single day and also across all those faculties as well. It's brilliant to see you putting so much effort in to make sure that there is that full holistic view on all the practicalities that are involved in what everybody has to do with their work. It's great to see that it all came together as well. And I've seen that video. I can attest it is very exciting. So yeah, absolutely. Along with Adam's description there, I think it's really worth going back to see that video. And we'll place that link into the Spotify podcast as well.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And I mean, I've watched that video and it's great, especially great to see Adam in a wig as well at the end there. Fantastic. I think it'd be really good to know as well, obviously this particular simulation relates to healthcare leadership and it's very interprofessional. And I really love that. Hiten, I think you have a few examples or you must do from your own education around what you do in other examples and within the medical school and particularly with reference to prescribing.
Yeah, indeed. So I mean, simulation has been a long-standing thing in medical education and healthcare education as it is. And what we've tried to do is we've tried to bring in a bit of that interprofessional aspect into things where we have medical and pharmacy students together. I think from a student perspective, it really increases their confidence when they're out in practice because they faced it in a simulation scenario before. And on top of that, I think the other aspect that they get out of it more than anything else is being able to learn from their peers and talk to other people in other healthcare environments. Many of them, they don't really know what other healthcare providers do. So it's really interesting for them to see how they work, what their thought processes are, what are their learning objectives in specific, and then how do those tie in with themselves and how can they come to that common goal to make sure that they're working together? Because overall, that's exactly what we want them to do, really. We essentially want them to go out into practice and understand exactly what's going to happen in practice.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I certainly agree from my, you know, relatively standoff point of view. But Adam, would you agree with what Hiten said around that kind of similar level of student engagement by running these simulations? And did you find that with CoughSim?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. There's a range of simulation available now. So from role playing through to virtual reality, immersive situations, using mannequins. So it is highly impactful. Overall, and particularly in healthcare and medicine, it's hugely important from a safety aspect that you don't generally let people out to practice on real life patients until they've at least tried it somewhere else beforehand and can make the mistakes and learn from that before they actually go and you know do it with a patient. You know, there's a huge safety aspect in simulation overall, and that's the great thing about, you know, how simulation's evolving. You know, when I studied to be a paramedic, it was on mannequins. It was using each other. And, you know, you could look back on some of those times from however long ago it was and think, were we really doing the right things there? You know, getting people completely more or less naked and trying things out on one another before you had the proper mannequins. So there's a whole probably a moral question from years ago worth of training there. But nowadays, when we have got 360 video, you've got interactive photogrammetry, immersive learning in headsets, it's completely different. And you know, the research that I've done in the past on simulation with colleagues is starting to demonstrate that, you know, within three and a half minutes of being in that environment, you are tricking yourself that you are in that environment. So your entire behavior changes from a simulation point of view, where you are not thinking this is a simulation. You're tricked to think that this is real life. You know, and just a really quick example on that, you know, if you're watching a video and you can see the television or you can see the screen around you, you know, it's a screen. But if you watch that same film or video in a headset, you will feel more part of it overall. And that's, you know, it's a psychological thing of changing our perception of the world to so that we're more involved. And that's, for me, how important simulation is in the delivery of training, but also that interprofessional aspect of putting ourselves in somebody else's shoes. You know, there's loads of examples out there of being involved in a car crash is a really good example. And one that we used to use was, you were the passenger in this car crash. So you'd been in the car, you could see what was going on. Somebody was playing on the mobile phone. The car then crashed. It blacks out. So it simulates you blacking out. And then you wake up and you've got the ambulance and the fire around you, the police and the helicopters, and your fellow passengers are injured. They're not moving. And there's the one point in this particular scenario where you're now being treated because you're the conscious person, and somebody comes to touch your arm. And it, well, because you're so immersed in it, it's about 9 minutes into the video or something, you actually move away thinking somebody's going to touch your arm. And it's so powerful that you can put yourself in different situations, learn from it, and make the best of it in the future as well.
This sounds like a very much kind of MGM Universal Studios kind of stuff that you're doing here. And with that, I mean, you're talking about really kind of high fidelity stuff, really getting the person involved and immersed into things, not just even just using mannequins, but being in that environment, so to speak, even though it is virtually. You also touched on the fact that you can use low fidelity solutions like paper, computer-based solutions as well. So how do you make sure that the technology that you're choosing is appropriate and is going to be helpful to the situation?
I think there's a number of things within that. And for me, and you know, the company that I worked with on developing some virtual reality stuff always used to start off with the first question to me was, what is the outcome you want to achieve? And that then leads to the best methodology of achieving that outcome. And there can be multiple ways to do that. You don't have to spend a lot of money on simulation whatsoever. You don't have to spend a lot of money on 360 simulation. The technology now is so cheap. You can do it through mobile phones, as well as doing it through more advanced technology. And I think that's the key thing, is what do you want to achieve out of it? What's that learning outcome? And then particularly, you know, being an academic and a professor, I would add in that, what's the pedagogical approach? So how are we going to pedagogically prove that we're going to achieve those outcomes through the method that we choose? And, you know, we see it in interviews as well, don't we? We often simulate aspects in interviews of in-tray exercises, or here's a scenario and tell us your example. And you can do that in written form, computer form. There are different ways to achieve those outcomes. But I think it's so important that you're focused on the outcome, not the method. I used to get carried away. I used to say, you know, I want this in simulation. I want this in VR. I want headsets for it. I want the best thing ever. But actually, when you scrolled it back to what's the outcome, well, the best way to achieve that immersive outcome is by doing this low fidelity exercise, and that then leads to the next level. So you can build up that simulation, you can build up that interactiveness, and I think that is the key thing. There isn't a one size fits all here, and it all depends on how immersed you want that learner to be. What is that outcome going to be overall, and what's the best way to achieve that?
That's really, really interesting, Adam. And what would you say to educators and trainers who don't have any experience of simulation and kind of want to take that first step? What would you say to them?
Well, you know, I was once in that situation. I had an interest. I wanted to do something. And I, you know, for metaphorically, took the bull by the horns to make it achievable. I spoke to the right people. I just reached out and did my reading and tried to understand it. And, you know, my approach is very much go big or go home, and think about, you know, let's do this the best that we can absolutely do it. And we'll tackle those barriers as we come across them. But what do we want to get out of it? How are we going to change, you know, particularly in a university setting, change the student experience? Because that then leads to better outcomes for the students, better outcomes for the lecturers. You feel much more engaged. Loads of other things going on that you can then develop from it. And I think my biggest advice on your question, David, is don't hold back. Don't think that you have to get it all right. Give it a go. Treat it as a simulation. You know, we can all learn things at the same time. As long as it's grounded in a safe approach, as long as there's that pedagogical understanding, you understand those learning outcomes. You don't need to be a simulation expert. You don't need to go and pay thousands of pounds or euros or dollars to get people in to do it. You can do something and build on it. And, you know, that's where, you know, CovSim has gone. You know, I've left the university now, but it's still continuing and it's still developing with different scenarios. And it's being explored even wider than just Coventry now as well, which is even better. So give it a go. Don't hold back. But there's plenty of research out there now. It's a developing area.
So there's lots of skills that you've kind of like touched on there as well in terms of communication, interprofessional stuff. One of the things that I think gets missed and is, I think, is really vitally important is leadership. And we get a lot of particular focus on those clinical and communication skills in undergraduate healthcare education. I think leadership needs to be out there right up at the front as well, because I think it brings in a lot of those skills all together. We're working on a project together at the moment with Inwa, where we're merging simulation and virtual reality to create a toolkit for teaching leadership to interprofessional groups. Can you expand on that VR Health Leaders project?
Absolutely. It's something I'm extremely proud of with Inwa to have been awarded through the European Union funds to deliver a really impactful outcome focused project with a huge range of fantastic partners from all around the continent as well. We have got through Inwa the experts that we absolutely need in the room to deliver something which is going to be outstanding for leadership around Europe and around the world as well. I really see it having huge potential. It's building on our CovSim event as such as a bit of a basis to develop those leadership skills that are required for future healthcare workers, but also more broadly than that. I think, you know, leadership is not singular in its approach overall. There's absolutely things healthcare can learn from other sectors and other sectors can learn from healthcare from a leadership point of view. And I'm absolutely passionate about leadership. It is the solution to most of our problems overall. And if we can get the right people in leadership positions, in more senior leadership positions, I probably should say as well, that then encourages leadership across all positions in an organization. And that's where I really see our VR Health Leaders project going, is it's giving everybody the opportunity to safely try something in their own environment, using the scenarios that we're developing with the experts and the pedagogical approach and the research outputs from that, so that they're able to practice those skills as a leader in a safe environment. You know, when I first became a leader, I didn't have that. I had to do effectively what I was told, and I did what I was told. And I very quickly learned that's not the way to lead. That is not what's going to get the best out of people. And if I had that opportunity to try something which was interactive, immersive, challenging me, giving me the direction and the outcomes like the VR Health Leader project is going to do, I think that would absolutely have helped me to become that first line leader in that position overall, because we often in leadership positions make our own mistakes and we don't have the opportunity to learn of other mistakes beforehand. And it's no good as a leader, I think, making those mistakes initially without having practiced it beforehand. So it goes back to what I said earlier about healthcare professionals. We would not put healthcare professionals with patients until they've practiced or until they've tried it first. And I think we absolutely need to do the same with leaders. Give them that space, try something different and keep trying it. You don't have to do it once and think you've got it. Keep trying different ways. And that's what the project will tease out of our future leaders, really, is getting them to understand better themselves, understand leadership better, and then be able to practice better as a leader straight away. And I'm really excited with the support package we can put around, how we can encourage coaching from it. You know, sports personalities get better through coaching, and we need to really adopt that with leadership as well. And the VR Health Leaders Project really going to push us as INWA, but also our partners, our universities, and the wider stakeholders that we've got through INWA and through the funding route to really get to that solid output eventually.
Yeah, I agree, Adam, and we're really excited to be working on it, obviously, as INWA, as a network. We're working with a lot of our partners, which is fantastic. We always like working with our network members to deliver something. And I think it goes back to your previous answer, actually, around maybe some of the barriers around people embedding simulation within their curricula. Because hopefully this project will develop a really good toolkit that will be designed for train the trainers. And our idea is that if we can provide that knowledge, provide that education, and break down some of those barriers that maybe some educators and teachers have got and that you identified, you know, especially taking that first step on the kind of simulation ladder, we believe this product can have real value there. And so if anyone's interested and you'd like to hear more, it has only just started this month, but please do visit the INWA website to find out more. And you can always drop me or Adam an email as well. So we're coming to the end of the podcast now. Time has really flown by, Adam, but we're now moving on to the final question. And for those of you that have listened to our podcast before, we know that we always try and end with a tricky question, something that might be hard for our guests to answer as a way of kind of concluding our podcast. So the question we got for you, Adam, is we've spoken a lot about educators and about trainers and on, I guess, more of a kind of university level or educational institute level. But now in your current role in policy, what would you say to policymakers about how they could embed simulation, how they could use simulation on a more national level, on an international level? And what role do you think simulation could play in kind of like improving, enhancing curricula around the globe?
Yeah, that is a tricky question, absolutely. And I think we need to think outside of the box with simulation in a policy aspect. And for me, it is highly useful to have for policymakers and decision makers as such, because you are often multiple steps removed from the impact that policy is going to have overall. So thinking from a healthcare perspective in the work that I do with colleagues and the Department for Health in England is, you know, we can make a decision, but actually how is that going to be interpreted? How is that going to be implemented overall? And by being removed, you can often forget that aspect. And for me in healthcare, it's all about the patient and all about the staff in healthcare overall and how they're going to be able to manage that policy to be able to deliver better patient care and better patient outcomes. And I think, you know, with technology advancing, with new models of simulation, so a good example is about branching virtual reality or branching 360 video, where you can make a decision and then the impact of your decision making is shown immediately. That takes a lot of planning. It takes a lot of thought process and a lot of working through, but you can come up with these type of scenarios to say, right, you made this decision and this is what happened because of that decision. And the idea I think simulation can have with that is help people to make better decisions overall, better policies, because you're thinking in a different way. You are understanding the impact of your decision making overall, or the policy that you're putting in place. And I think, you know, we have a hugely important role as policymakers to be holistic thinkers and to really understand how we make decisions. And that can be based upon our personal judgments and our personalities. So thinking, you know, about psychological assessments and, you know, Myers-Briggs personality type indicators as an example, where we talked about decision making in different ways. I think we have to be able to practice in a very safe way before we then go into anger and making policy decisions, as an example. And I think embedding a simulation approach, doesn't need to be simulation, but a simulation approach of educating future policymakers, educating people who are studying policy in university, helping them to understand how to make better decisions, can really be done through simulation in many different forms: low fidelity, high fidelity, VR, immersion, and that can be done on a local. So thinking about local authorities and local decision makers, and particularly in England as we're developing integrated care systems, but it can also be done nationally and internationally as well. But you've got to have the right people in the room to come up with those scenarios, come up with that simulation, understand that outcome, understand that pedagogical approach. You know, and linking back to VR health leaders, that's absolutely what we're doing. We have got the experts in the room to develop a simulation package that can help people be better leaders. And you can just replace the word leaders to be better policymakers, to be better decision makers. And I think, you know, the format that we'll put in place through VR Health Leaders is the springboard for all the other areas that we can simulate in the future. And I think there is a role there across curriculum. I think we have an opportunity through INWA, through networks, to be able to say, look, here is a well established, grounded in research, grounded in evidence approach to develop people to be better themselves. And then it's down to networks and down to governments and regulators as such to make sure that's really embedded into curriculum as strongly as it can be. And that's what I'm really passionate about. And that's what I know, you know, the work I've done with INWA over the last 4 or 5 years is absolutely always been about. You know, we've got the right people and we always want more people to get involved. And I think that's where we can develop in a curriculum and a policy state. So I hope that's kind of answered that difficult question in some regard anyway.
You did. Just like all our guests, you answered it very well. Too well, almost. We must try harder to get our challenging question up to a level where, you know, we don't quite get such good answers. No, I'm only joking. I mean, it was fantastic and it was really great to hear, wasn't it, Hitam?
Absolutely, yeah. And thank you so much for joining us today, Adam. It's great to hear about all the exciting things that you've done already and obviously the exciting stuff that's to come, like the VR Health Leader project. Thank you, David. And finally, thank you to everybody that's listening. Remember, you can share this podcast if you've enjoyed it. So make sure that you share it through Spotify, Google or Apple Podcasts. And we look forward to seeing you on the next episode. Thank you very much, everyone.
This podcast was brought to you by the International Network for Health Workforce Education. INWA is a multi-stakeholder, interprofessional network aiming to improve the education and training provided to health professionals globally. We promote online knowledge sharing, run academic events, and participate in research projects. You can join our network completely free by visiting www.inwa.org. You can follow us on Twitter at @INWA_network and please share this episode with your friends and colleagues. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Google, iTunes or Spotify. And if you enjoyed it, leave us a positive rating. Casting the Network is co-hosted by Hitam Mitha and David Smith and produced and edited by Hitam Mitha. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. See you next time.